All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, time to really focus on the charts as we're chatting with Dana Lyons. Dana is a fund manager and editor of the Lion Share Pro website. We talk to Dana pretty much every 2 weeks, and he gives us insights on what his models, his internal models, are telling him about the strength in a number of different sectors. Dana has told us many times he avoids the news and the noise. And Dana, that's why I think right now it will be very interesting to hear what you're seeing in these markets, because whole lot of green on the screen, especially this week. I do want to start with commodities, and let's start with gold. GLD, I know you trade that. It was a month or two ago that you said you were looking at that 414 level on GLD. It's touched that level two times, really, since you told us that. And this week, a nice rebound, especially on Wednesday. It seems like the strength Thursday and Friday early on in markets has kind of dissipated throughout the day. But curious what your trading strategy and what your models are telling you about the gold market, GLD in particular.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. So right now, we're still kind of lukewarm on the metals market. We do have long positions in a number of the metals and miners. We are still hedged in silver and gold miners. We see some challenges there. I think the overall theme, you know, we tend to, and we're at a key juncture, I think, right now, but we tend to kind of overweight the importance of every single day's move in some of these markets, especially when they're volatile like this. But I think if you zoom back, what we've been talking about since kind of that parabolic move bubble, if you want to say, popped at the end of January in the metals, what we've been saying since then is, no matter if that's the end of the run, or maybe we end up breaking out again and extending the bull market, we are very much likely to be in some sort of a trading range or consolidation digestion mode for some time. And if you zoom out, I think that's the primary takeaway right now, is we're still kind of digesting the frenzy that kind of culminated in that late January move in the metals and miners. So I guess the key takeaway would be, long or short, I would avoid taking, you know, any outsized positions at this time until we get a little bit more clarity on the situation in metals. Like I said, we expect more range bound trade here more than anything, but we are still do have a hedge on in GDX, which is at a key juncture here, and silver, which is, you know, late in the week has, it depends on the close today, really, but is trying to at least make some constructive technical moves here.
Yeah, Dane, I was going to ask you about the close today, because we are talking here on Friday, and a lot of people weight the weekly charts more heavily than the daily charts. Obviously, they're longer duration, but silver is popping back up above $80 an ounce. I know you look at SLV, but I'm also looking at copper up at $6.30 a pound, which is probably going to be a new all-time weekly closing high for copper. I know that we've talked to you about copper and silver before and gold, so maybe contrast them against one another, because we have people in all three buckets that listen to the show.
Yeah, definitely. I would not lump copper in with the other two. I'm glad you pointed that out. Much more constructive on copper, and did get an opportunity earlier this week or late last week to add to our copper position, CPER. I do like copper a lot. So for, you know, again, we've been talking about, you know, the hierarchy of these metals. And for a long time, copper was kind of the laggard. I'd say now, just because it didn't undergo such a frenetic kind of a frothy blow off, it's obviously in a better position technically right now and hitting new highs, like you said. So much more constructive in the near term on copper, CPER specifically, than we are in the other names.
So Dana, you mentioned that, look, range-bound trading, these markets need to make a decision which direction they're going, whether it's gold or silver or GDX. What are the levels that you're watching that, if broken above or below, would signify to you that the market has made that directional decision?
You know, in SLV, we've been watching 72 very closely. we are trying to get above there right now. I would say just looking at even getting above that 50-day average is at least a feather in the cap for SLV. So that would have, even if we close between 70 and 72, even if we are below 72, we'll probably be covering part or all of our hedge right now, just because it's a little bit more constructive now, technically being above that moving average. I would say gold has some work to do here. GLD specifically, we've been looking at 440. You mentioned 413, 414 has been our line we've been looking at on the downside. On the upside, you know, around that 440 level, it would take a decisive close above there for us to get a little bit more interested in being more long. But again, I think the overall takeaway is we don't want to get too aggressive in gold or silver or the gold silver miners right now, and until we have more clarity out of this kind of digestion through this range bound trade. And GDX specifically, we're right at like the levels that we've been looking at, around to call it about 94 and a half right now. Decisive close above there, we would probably cover our hedge in that one.
Well, Dan, I'm kind of putting you on the spot on this question because I don't know if you follow these markets, but we've had a theme all week about the critical minerals, which are getting a lot of airtime from this administration over in Europe, around the world. A lot of this ties into what's going on in geopolitics and global trade. But if you look at the lithium ETF, which is LIT, or if you look at the critical minerals ETF, which is REMX, they've been on a run that's a little different trajectory than the other metals. I wonder if you have any thoughts on LIT or REMX.
They've been on our radar a little bit too late on our radar. We would like to be long. Certainly LIT ran away from us. We were looking at about a month ago or so. If we got a chance on a pullback towards it, I guess it maybe a month ago broke out around that 75, 76 level. If we got a pullback in that range, we'd certainly be interested in going long that one. But at this time, not looking to chase anything that's kind of up on a rope like that. So that's basically where we are. Our philosophy is one of relative strength in terms of investment selection. So we want to be concentrated in those areas that are performing the best. And when there are, you know, pretty much a wide array of areas that are working like they are right now, even though maybe not firing on all cylinders, but there's certainly no shortage of areas in the market that are working. And we recognize that even though we're focused on relative strength, we're not going to be in every market at all times that is working. So if we miss one, we'd rather wait for a better opportunity to get an entry point, a better risk reward entry point than, you know, certainly going out there and chasing prices that have run up so much.
All right. I want to ask you about oil too, because, well, there's a lot of news in the oil price, and I know you try to ignore that news, and there's a lot of volatility in the oil price. Do your models have any insights on where this market is going, or is this kind of an avoid for now market?
Yeah, we don't really have any models specifically for oil. You know, our equity models, our main model, and it incorporates a lot of internal data directly from the equity market itself. So if we're considering oil, it's really strictly based off the price charts. And obviously, you know, benefit of doubt is to the upside still in oil. We don't have any positions, not really interested nearby in any positions in the commodity itself. Now, oil equities or energy equities, we do have a number of positions on, and we do like the longer term trajectory there. We talked about that long term cup and handle on XLE, which had a nice breakout, nice run that we're able to take advantage of. It's lagging a little bit right now. We do have some other positions in MLP, position that has performed extremely well on top of the massive dividend that it pays. And then another one that we just more relevant maybe in the near term would be the oil services. So a ticker like OIH has been on a nice run really the whole year. had a nice breakout about a month ago, pulling back now with oil prices kind of settling in. We did add a position OIH the other day around in the low 410s. Looks good as long as it can hold that area. Certainly higher highs, higher lows, and off of the extended levels that it was at, even a couple of weeks ago. So if you've been looking for a spot to get in there, that's not a bad area right now.
Dana, just a quick follow-up on that OIH and the oil services. I've followed the oil sector pretty closely and seen a lot of articles out and watched some podcasts where people were flagging the oil services because of the rebuild they believe is on tap, just to put a lot of the infrastructure back in place, or the companies that have infrastructure making hay while the sun is shining. When you look at a chart like OIH versus XLE, it does look stronger. Is there anything you'd be watching for technically to signal maybe it's topping out or that it's a continuation pattern? What technical factors or quant factors are you looking at with something like OIH?
Yeah, it's strictly technical, looking at retracement levels, looking at horizontal support levels. We had the breakout from around 10, but it truly it has run pretty well just even since the beginning of the year. So I acknowledge that this might be getting in a little bit high, but as long as we continue to hold those initial support levels and keep hitting higher highs, higher lows, all we can do is go by price behavior right now and continues to be constructive until we start hitting lower lows and start breaking down below some of these levels, which we'll keep an eye on. So right now it's bullish. Certainly, like any prices, that can change, and our investment posture will change with it. But right now we continue to see constructive action there.
All right, time to get into the US equity markets because boy, oh boy, have those been on a tear. Tech is doing well. There's actually all kinds of sectors that are doing well. And this earnings season is turning out to be almost a historic one, but it's quarter after quarter. We're seeing massive revenue growth and earnings growth. I know you don't follow those numbers, but just in terms of the chart, it was a shallow dip that was bought very quickly and skyrocketed back to all-time highs. Where do we go from here in something like the S&P?
Yeah, so like we discussed the last couple of times I was on, our after a brief dip deterioration in the build up to the start of the Iran conflict, until basically mid-April or so, our risk model did turn negative temporarily, but it's been back positive for the last month or so. I would say it's probably, if you look at the price charts on a lot of these, the major averages in some of the sectors, we're seeing really big moves, outsized moves to the upside, and especially in the tech and growth space. And while the data has been good enough to turn our model back bullish as of, again, about a month ago, I would say it's not, we don't see the data hitting on all cylinders. We don't see the data matching up necessarily with some of the big price moves like the S&P that we're seeing. If you look at another broad measure, for example, the equal weight S&P still hasn't been able to hit a new high above those the pre-war highs that we hit back in February when really breadth was really strong until late February, early March was started to turn down in advance of the war. So we would love to see, kind of a re-acceleration in the in breadth stats and the internals and some of these other broad data indicators in order to be more confident in maintaining or in the prospects for a more sustainable intermediate term rally. So we are, the action's been enough to keep us substantially bullish, but again, not exactly hitting on all cylinders, which has our antenna up that once this move does run its course, that maybe there's going to be a much more sizable corrective action in store for this. But for now, enough to be substantially bullish, like I said. So that's where we're concentrated on right now.
Okay, Dana, I kind of want to dig in there a little further with you. You got your antenna up, you're looking at the internals, you're looking at the breadth, you're looking at some of the other measures. You're still bullish. The market has been bullish. It's been making new all-time highs. But you had mentioned off mic that it seems a little late cycle to you. And I wonder what other data that you may incorporate to look at where we are in the cycle, because it has been running for a long time. And at one point, all markets have corrective periods. What would signal to you on your data that we are late cycle and maybe ready for more of a, I guess, more meaningful or more prolonged corrective period?
Well, if you want to really zoom out, and we've talked about those longer term economic and market, what we call background indicators, valuation, levels of household investment. If you look at the Buffett indicator, things like that, you know, the GDP to market cap, everything is almost all of those are at historically, you know, excessive levels. So from a long, really long-term perspective, obviously, eventually that reckoning, that tremendous reckoning is going to unfold. That's very hard to time, which is why we concentrate on the intermediate term, and our models are geared toward that intermediate term, 2 to 6 months. So from that perspective, our models, like I mentioned, are still bullish. I would start looking for more of a deterioration in the internals, in some of the breadth stats, more divergences in some of the broad averages versus the S&P and some of the mega caps, just thinning out of the rally in the areas and stocks and stock segments that are hitting new highs. So we are kind of seeing that unfold a little bit here. We're seeing, despite the new highs in the S&P and really a lot of the average, even the micro caps and the Russell 2000 have hit new highs. So it's not a complete situation where we have non-confirmations across the board, but we are undoubtedly seeing a thinning out of kind of the new highs. So the more and more those, the fundamental, you know, kind of the bricks in that foundation building and propping this market up, the more and more you take away, the obviously the less stable that rally gets. So right now I would continue to maintain our bullish stance, but we'll be looking at indications in within our models, which again, a lot of that pertains to breadth and internals, for kind of a further deterioration and a downturn despite continued up moves in price action. And one other thing I would mention is just the four-year cycle. You know, even if it's not a secular top, a pretty consistent four-year cycle in the market. We've seen, you know, even the last couple cycles, a cycle top in 22 in a bear market, and a cycle top in 2018. So even if it's like a cyclical type of a top, there's certainly compelling evidence to suggest that that would may well be something that we see later this year, maybe this summer or so. And even adding to that would be the presidential cycle, where we're within the worst two-quarter stretch historically in the presidential cycle. So we've got a number of factors that are kind of lining up to that point, again, to the fact that, yes, things are good right now, but they can turn quickly.
Yeah, fair enough. Things have been quite good for a while. Dips have been bought so, so quickly. And I guess the argument being that eventually there needs to be a longer-term correction. But I also feel like we've been here before. We're starting to see money just concentrate back in some of the mega-cap stocks. Maybe rightfully so, because their earnings have been so strong. Their valuations aren't historically at all-time highs, or I would even say warning signs, because their earnings have grown so much. But that does sound like the environment we're in, and we've lived through these environments before where money spreads out, money concentrates in the big stocks, but overall it still seems like more money's coming into the markets. And if money continues to concentrate on the big cap tech stocks, curious your thought on something like the Mag 7, that can really drive markets. So what is your outlook for the Mag 7?
Yeah, I mean, right now, just based on price action, you just have to go with the momentum. And we've got plenty of exposure to areas of the momentum, the mega cap, mag stocks, semiconductors, other tech areas. And you have to go with the momentum. If you're not in it, it's hard to jump aboard, you know, based on FOMO. But if you're on board, you just got to run with it, because it can run even if the foundation starts to deteriorate. You look at something like the dot-com era, where, you know, there was really from, you know, late 99 to the top in spring, there's little evidence to support, you know, that massive run up that we saw in the internet stocks and the dot-com stocks, other than just price momentum. So that's another reason to concentrate on relative strength when you're choosing, you know, investment selection, because momentum is a powerful thing, and you want to take advantage of that, even if, you know, the underlying data, the broad data doesn't necessarily support a move like that. If you want to extrapolate that even farther back, you look at the broad market that topped out in 1998, really almost 2 years before the top of the dot-com bubble, and yet you saw the NASDAQ 100 go on the run that it did. So you have to incorporate a little bit of momentum, especially in the investment selection, even if there are, you know, signs of deteriorating or even a breakdown in that broader, in the broader foundation of the market.
Well, Dana, just sticking with momentum, and we've looked at the Mag 7 and the big boys, let's shift to the other side of the spectrum, to the small caps. You mentioned the strength in the Russell 2000. If you look at the IWM, it's closing today an all-time new weekly closing high, and it's been just rocketing up lately. It eclipsed its highs from earlier in the year just the last couple of weeks, and it's just kept going. What do you make of the small caps?
Yes, and I do like, and it's kind of a contrast between some of the lackluster broad performance in something like the equal S&P, and then you look at the Russell 2000, or even you look at the microcaps, IWC, for example, also breaking out and hitting all-time highs. So we do like those spaces as long as the price action is constructive, and we've had good positions in some of the growth areas of the small caps, the pure growth RZG, and then the mid-cap growth RFG as well. Those have been leading the way. So we continue to be concentrated on those areas of the market. So as long as the price action holds up, we're certainly happy to be involved in that, in those areas, even if, you know, some of the data that we're looking at feeds into our model isn't necessarily, I'll say it again, hitting on all cylinders. It's the price action in these areas, and the data has been just good enough to keep us substantially invested. So we'll happily be long those areas until, you know, the evidence dictates that we jump ship.
What about Bitcoin or cryptos broadly? Bitcoin went through about a 5 to 6 month correction, kind of straight down, not totally straight down, but it was a big correction from 126 down to 60. But now it's back on the rise. What's the chance of Bitcoin, let's say, gets back up to that $100,000 level?
We're long Bitcoin and Ethereum, just more or less a short-term trade. Ethereum, we're looking at upside to just above 2,500. We would take some profits there. Maybe we get to 3,000. We'd be happy with 2,500. Bitcoin, we had a short-term target up near 84,000. We approached that the other day, take profits there. 100,000 would be our top target in terms of the short-term trade. If we get up there, we'd be ecstatic. We wouldn't have our full position on, certainly at that point, having sold some. If we got there, we'd probably jump ship with the rest of our positions. As you know, the longer term, I'm not sure how bullish we are with that, but this is more or less a short-term trade. So we'll, when we put on a short-term trade, we'll take off the trade in the short term rather than, you know, crossing our fingers and hoping it becomes something longer term, because I don't see that in the works yet at this point. So again, just keeping the focus short term in the cryptos.
Well, Dana, just in keeping with our tradition over the years, I'm going to ask you about international markets. You always have some interesting hot takes on which ETFs in other countries or emerging markets or anything else on your radar beyond U.S. markets, cryptos and commodities. What do you see internationally?
Yeah, you know, some of the emerging markets have just been extremely strong. I mentioned, you know, some, you can't get into everything, and we did miss a couple emerging markets, Taiwan and South Korea, for example, which has gotten a little bit frothy. But just EEM has been extremely strong. Just broke out the other day, again, hitting new highs. And If you scroll back over the last couple of decades, EEM was really in a, and the underlying index at that was in a pretty much a trading range for about 20 years before breaking out earlier this year. It came back, tested kind of that breakout point a couple months ago, and now hitting new highs again. So emerging markets, just generally speaking, look very strong. And then there are even a number of areas still in Europe, some of the quote unquote pigs that we still like, Spain and Italy, the Netherlands, another one not within that group, but also very constructive price movement. And then even broadly speaking, something like the global Dow, ticker symbol would be DGT, had another breakout just recently and hitting all-time highs. So we're seeing a lot of, still a lot of participation internationally. We've talked about kind of the long-term cycle that has favored US over the last couple decades that may be shifting in the long term towards or in favor of some of the internationals, whether it's developing markets or emerging markets, which has lagged again for the last couple of decades, but might be seeing a sea change in that regard right now. So that's where we're at with international. We've got a pretty good array of longs on right now internationally, and I guess emerging markets would be probably the star just recently, and I think longer term has sizable upside going forward.
All right, Dana, we will wrap it up here. Again, Dana Lyons, fund manager and editor of the LionShare Pro website. Click that link in the show notes to follow along with Dana over at that LionShare Pro. And Dana, it still sounds like there's a lot of opportunities out there. Yes, maybe later cycle for some of these long-term moves, but boy, oh boy, momentum has been really good this last little while. And that's in the face of still these wars going on and all kinds of other, I guess, potentially concerning aspects. But you look at the underlying data, and even as you're saying, look at these charts, and there's a lot of places to make money. Always interesting finding out what you're trading here, Dana. Dana, thank you so much for your time. And everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Be sure to go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Just search The KE Report. You can listen to the full weekend show as well as all our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week. Dana, I hope you have a great rest of your week. And everybody, thanks for taking some time this weekend to join us.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.